My text for this morning consists of just one verse. It comes from the fourth gospel, and it's chapter 6, and it's verse 38, the words of our Lord Jesus. I have come down from heaven, not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. Now we've just sung, Thou didst thy Father's name confess, and in his will delight. This morning I just want to think very briefly how from the moment that our Lord Jesus left heaven until the moment he laid down his life on the cross, he chose to do God's will and not his own. Mr. J.G. Deck, who wrote our opening hymn, penned the words that you've just sung, and in his will delight. And when he did that, he undoubtedly had his eye on verses 6 to 8 of Psalm 40, which read, burnt offering and sin offering you did not require. Then I said, behold, I come. In the scroll of the book it is written of me, I delight to do your will, O my God. And there can be no doubt that these, from Psalm 40, are the words of our Lord Jesus himself, spoken prophetically some 1,000 years before their fulfillment. Because the writer to the Hebrews says concerning these Old Testament animal sacrifices, it is impossible that the blood of bulls and goats should take away sins. Therefore, the writer continues, entering the world, he, our Lord Jesus, said, sacrifice and offering you did not desire, but a body you have prepared for me. Then I said, behold, I have come. In the scroll of the book it is written of me, to do your will, O God. Note those words, entering the world. And remember the words of Jesus that we read from John 6. I have come down from heaven, not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. It was therefore, as I said just now, from the moment our Lord left heaven, that he chose to do God's will and not his own. So it is not surprising that we find that our Lord's very first recorded words when in the world, recorded for us by Luke, chapter 2 of his Gospel, words spoken by our Lord at the age of 12 to his mother in the court of the Temple of Jerusalem, that his very first recorded words were, why did you seek me? Did you not know that I must be about my Father's business? Literally, that I must be in the things of my Father, occupied, that is, with his affairs. Our Lord spoke of his Father's will several times in John's Gospel, chapters 4 to 6. First, as his, our Lord's, food. Then, as his goal and his desire, and finally, as the very purpose for which he had left heaven. Speaking metaphorically, of course, he told his disciples in chapter 4 that God's will was his food. And we read in verses 33 and 4 that when the disciples queried, has anyone brought him anything to eat? Jesus said to them, quote, my food is to do the will of him who sent me, and to finish his work. And so, having spoken earlier to the Samaritan woman about water which she could never draw from the well at Sychar, he now spoke to his disciples about food, which they could never buy in the city of Sychar. For he had drawn his nourishment and satisfaction from a higher source, that of performing his Father's will by ministering spiritual help to a needy Samaritan woman by a well. But his Father's will was not only his food. It was, he told the Jews of Jerusalem in chapter 5, his goal and object in life. Having spoken to them of his God-given right to judge all men, he then asserted, as I hear God, that is, I judge. And my judgment is righteous, it's fair, it's just, because I do not seek my own will, but the will of the Father who sent me. No assessment or judgment which our Lord pronounced was ever warped or tainted by self-interest or any personal considerations. Every judgment he pronounced, he had first heard passed by the Father. And his perfect submission to his Father's will was therefore the guarantee of the fairness and equity of his judgment. But his Father's will was not only his delight, his food, and his goal. He informed the Jews of Galilee in chapter 6, it was the very purpose for which he had left heaven. Just before, he had told them, you have seen me, and yet do not believe. Did that mean that his mission, that his ministry, was to prove fruitless and to fail then? No, far from it, because he immediately added, all that the Father gives me will come to me, will reach me, will arrive with me. And the one coming to me, the one on the way to me, I will by no means cast out. And then he gave the reason why he could never reject those who came. For I have come down from heaven, not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. And this is, he added, the will of the Father who sent me, that of all he has given me I shall lose nothing, but should raise it up at the last day. The very fact that he had come to carry out God's will ruled out the possibility that he could ever discard any that the Father had given to him for safekeeping. There lay the absolute guarantee of their eternal security and mine. I said at the outset that our Lord chose to do God's will and not his own from the moment he left heaven until the moment he laid down his life on the cross. And so he did. We've already thought of the words of our Lord when entering the world, quoted by the writer to the Hebrews, I have come to do your will, O God. But I know that the writer then added, and by that will we have been sanctified through the offering of the body of Jesus Christ once for all. But it would be unthinkable for us this morning to bypass the Garden of Gethsemane, where our Lord anticipated his horrifying suffering of the coming day. Matthew tells us that he fell on his face and prayed, saying, O my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. Then, Matthew says, he came to the disciples. Again, a second time, he went away and prayed, saying, O my Father, if this cup cannot pass away from me unless I drink it, your will be done. The olive trees of Gethsemane knew him well. John tells us in his gospel that our Lord often assembled there with his disciples, but those now twisted trees had never heard such prayers as these before, nor would they ever again. Earlier in his gospel, Matthew had informed us that Jesus used the very same words, your will be done, on a previous occasion, when teaching his disciples how to pray. After this manner, pray, he had said, our Father in heaven, Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Oh yes, the one who had come down from heaven to do his Father's will knew well how perfectly that will was done in heaven. But he also knew that the fulfilling of that will by him or by any other on earth or in heaven had never proved so costly as it would that day. And yet, knowing all, our glorious Lord aligned himself with the Father's will. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will. And we often and rightly contrast our Lord's submission to God's will in Gethsemane with the first man's rejection of God's will in another garden, long before, and we have good authority for doing it. The Apostle Paul drew out the contrast clearly toward the close of chapter 5 of his letter to the Romans. As through one man's offence, judgment came to all men, resulting in condemnation, even so, through one man's righteous act, the free gift came to all men, resulting in justification of life for, as by one man's disobedience many were made sinners, so also by one man's obedience many will be made righteous. And Adam said to God in effect, not what you will, but what I will, and proceeded to ratify his decision at a tree, that of the knowledge of good and evil, with devastating consequences, not only for himself, but for all those linked with him, the entire human race, bringing condemnation and death to all. Our Lord Jesus reversed that decision. Not what I will, but what you will. And he also proceeded to ratify his decision at a tree, walking the path of obedience all the way to death, even death on a cross, and thereby secured the most blessed consequences for everyone linked by faith with him, bringing justification and life to them all, and to us, praise his name.